Today, Louis, I'd love to talk about spirituality. I think it's something that a lot of settlers are very curious about how Indigenous people practice spirituality. And so what the Sahuapmec people do for all of the different ways of being in terms of how we act with each other, how we communicate with each other and with the earth, that all of those things are tied in with your spiritual beliefs. And I think that would be kind of a neat thing to talk about today.
Good question. What is spirituality?
Oh, yeah. That's it's big, yeah.
Yeah, because Sapatayami is spirituality. Asuisiam, Kuatasiani, Tamihuka, Sawapma, Sukumina, Tatiam, Squatinas, Yani. I was looking for a word for church, but we don't have one. And I had the same problem, too, and I was giving a talk at the gathering place when they said that. And I come to a point where I was going to say auditorium, and I couldn't think of a Sahuapmec word for it. And all I could think of was Chiyumachitu. It's a big house. So I'll call this church is Jitu. Yeah, that liam as a Kwatina as a Sahuapmec and a Jitu. Yeah, Kaka yam a quiet yanni at the milk as a Kwatina. What I said was, we didn't have a so called church where we came and prayed and, I think our church was all outside because we spent all our time hunting and gathering. So I think that was our church, and everywhere we went. Well, I know my grandmother was talking about praying Kwatina Yam Kalkupi. She said that when you wake up and you go greet the day, you say a prayer for your immediate family to look after everyone and yourself. You always put yourself last when you say a prayer. So I've been doing that for about 40 years now. Whenever I wake up, I look at the sunrise, say a prayer for my family to look after them. And that's where Siad was taken away from us for a long time. All our spiritual beliefs. So it's really difficult to say what is our spirituality. So, there's bits and pieces that's still with us. Because I could remember times when my grandmother, she could say the whole mass in Sahuapmec Jin. I think she learned it through that, that priest brought that book out. What is the name of that? I can't remember it anyway, but they had a written language in Sahuapmec. But my grandmother was a devout Catholic. And every Sunday she had a prayer. She had mass at her place. Well, it was at the church to begin with, after the priest left us. That's another story. Hmm. And so every Sunday she'd have mass, mostly just her and her daughter, Teresa, I remember, and the kids. They'd have mass at her place after our church burnt down. So it was one of those things that, that's what the Catholic Church did to our people, they got that control over us. And there was a lot of things that we couldn't do. If you listen to some of our tapes, they always referred over to the church, said we couldn't do this, or the priest said we can do that, or we can't do that. So I think a lot of our spirituality was taken away from us. So what is spirituality? I I kind of believe that what they believed in, the outside, you know, the land was part of the real big part of the spirituality. And myself, when I started sweating about 40 years ago, I think that the real big part of our spirituality is that connection to the land. Because a lot of times I go in there, especially the only times I really go in there is when my stomach is tied in a knot and I feel frustrated, I feel anger. You know, I always talk about that anger. You know, the anger rubs off on you. When a lot of people are mad, they go and they rub their anger off on somebody. And that goes on and on and on. Pretty soon you got about 50 to 100 people angry for what? So I think a lot of that rubs off on me too. So I usually go up to my sweat and meditate and say my prayer for my family. And I think it's relaxing because a lot of times I feel, when I come back, I feel that tension is gone from my stomach again. And I'm not mad anymore, you know, and I feel more refreshed. I feel like getting more energetic. And it's a big difference. I'll tell people maybe I sweat too much because when you look at back at my younger days, you know, the angry young guy I was, you know, it was, I was angry. I don't know what at, but I never could find out what I was mad about, but it was always that anger me. That's why I got in and out of trouble. But once I started learning about our culture again, I think it kind of opened my eyes to realize who I am a little bit. And I think my mother said the same thing too. You know, I think it's a realization of something we could believe in, like all religions, you know. They give you a little idea of how to go in life, because all our Chiptakwala tells us how to act in life. So, to me, it's a lot of the sweats, because some of the old people say that the sweat house is like Mother Earth's womb. When you go in there, you come out, you're reborn again. And I start to really believe in that. And to me, it's about letting your anger go in there. And trying to act like a human being.
So tell us a little bit more about the sweat lodge. Like, is it made for just one person? And do you make it every time?
Well, I got one up there, up in the hillside. I've been sweating for about 40 years. And it's made out of twigs, and it's in a dome-like little structure, big enough for you to crawl inside and sweat. I think that you heat up rocks. Rocks are the part that you heat up outside the sweat house. Then you have a little pit inside when the rocks are heated. You have a little container of water inside there. Then you bring the hot rocks in there. Then you, I think you warm up, let the sweat house warm up a bit from the hot rocks, and then you go in. I usually put a little offering of sage or dried cedar boughs on there. And it's kind of cleansed it. Because, you know, apparently you want all the evil spirits out of there. You don't want them to take possession of you, according to the old people. So once you get inside there, start splashing the water on the hot rocks, and it creates that steam, the sauna. And that's the beginning stages. And I usually stay in there till all of my rocks cooled off and it quit steaming. That's, and some people go in and out. There's different variations of it. A lot of people do four times. They go in there and then they got some water, little pool or river or lake or whatever outside. They jump in there. And myself, I stay in there until all the rocks are cooled right off. Then I go and jump in my little pool I have there. And a lot of people think I'm crazy, but to me it's about, I think in a sense it's kind of like spirituality for me. Because I go there anytime I'm feeling down and out, and don't matter what time of the year it is, I go in there. Even if it's in the winter time, I still go in there, do my sweat, and then come out and jump in the water. A lot of people think I'm crazy, but you get used to it. Mm-hmm. You know, you come back with icicles all over your hair. They think you're crazy, but but to me, it's about that getting rid of that anger. And so I think that, to me, I think that's a really big part of our spirituality. And a lot of people ask me to use my sweat, and I said no, because I learned from my grandmother. She said, my kya, you know, she said, don't let other people use it. You know, the bad gets off of them, and if you go in there, it'll rub off on you. So I think so. That's why I never let anybody else use mine. I let close family, you know, like your son, your daughter, your wife, they can use it, but not anybody else. I don't think I've ever hardly let anybody use it. And I've had it up in the hillside, and it's the old homestead of my grandmother. They stayed up there for a few years, and so it's kind of a little bit sacred to me. You know, a lot of memories up there, you know, when I think back. I grew up with my grandmother, you know, and I find I really appreciate her more. And, I appreciated her when she was alive, you know, and I think there was a lot of things they taught me when I was growing up, because I spent a lot of time. Because I found out a new Suwepmuk word for motorcycle.
There's a Suwepmuk word for motorcycle.
Yeah, mosaisi. That's what, I guess when I was a little kid, there used to be motorcycles going by. They'd say, hey boy, what's going by? And I'd say, mosaisi. Yeah, they took me a lot, I guess, and when I was just a young guy, because that was part of our custom, you know, the eldest son staying with their grandparents. But that's why some things I know instinctively, I guess they must have been teaching me something, you know, and they were trying to teach me some of the old ways, and salmon fishing, drying of the berries, root crops. You know, all of that. And smoking salmon, well, my grandmother had to reteach me that one, how to smoke salmon again. And never did smoke deer meat, though. But yeah, spirituality, I think, to me, is about really about the sweat house. Because every time you take anything from Mother Earth, you got to make an offering of some kind.
Well, tell us more about that, about making the offering. Like, I've seen you when we were doing the Wapato project and we were out at the site where they were growing. When you dug one up, you gave a tobacco offering.
Yeah. Well, it's not, it's any kind of offering. Even if sometimes even a simple prayer will do. Anything you got off you. But usually you carry around a little pouch of tobacco on your neck or something like that to... I think it's giving back to Mother Earth what you've taken, you know, to understand. That's what I keep talking about, you know. We keep taking and taking, and we're going to pay. Because we always have to give something back in return. Whenever you take something, you should be given something back in return. even in friendship, if somebody offer you friendship, well, you have to accept it and give back your friendship to him. So to me, it's reciprocal, I think the word for it is. You know, to always give back. That's why I think, you know, Mother Earth's getting mad now. And she's getting angry because we keep taking and taking from her. Everything is disappearing. So that's what I keep telling people, you know, that if we don't give back something in return, we're going to all pay for it. And you could see it by what's happening, all the flooding, the fires, the hurricanes, the you name it, the slides, everything. Kind of scary, but, you know, because we don't honor her enough, you know, Mother Earth. Because look at all the things she gives us, everything you named, everything you look in your room, everything you walk on, everything you drive, everything that you use, where does it come from? Nobody thinks about that. Everybody says, oh, it came from the grocery store or the hardware store. But where did it all come from? See, that's the spirituality, I think, that our people believed in. Well, we do have a cult Kupi, and it's in our stories.
The creator?
Yeah, the creator. Kult Kupi means creator in our language. Mm. Yeah.
Oh. And so there's a difference between the creator and Mother Earth.
Yep. Because he's the one that came and taught us how to live off the land. And there's sayings that when he left, everything was all copacetic, and he walked off into the sunset. And when things get bad, he's going to come back and redo all the wrong things that we've did. So I'm waiting for that day to see him come out of the sunset and start fixing the land back up again and getting the people all thinking alike. Mm-hmm.
What about the creation story? Does Sahuatmic people have a creation story? I know they seem to kind of vary from culture to culture all over North America. I've heard a lot of creation stories about Sky Woman.
Yeah, well, we all do have our differences, but they're all pretty well the same thing. Even if you look at it, you know, you look at any so-called laws or protocols. You even look at the churches. They have their Ten Commandments. And I believe that we have the similar things. Mm-hmm. Otherwise we wouldn't exist as people. You know, and if anybody, the worst thing that could happen in our cultures, when you kill somebody maliciously, you were ostracized. You were driven off the band. You weren't allowed to come back. So when other bands see you roaming around by yourself, they know you did something bad and wrong, so they wouldn't really accept you into their band. You know, so it's like that, I guess, in any culture. You know, a set of rules or so-called commandments or laws or, you know, you look at anything now that we do. If you look at the bylaws, they're similar to something yep. that we can do and we can't do.
Yeah.
So I think every culture has it. It's not specific to one culture. Mm-hmm. Every culture has their own laws. Otherwise, we'd never got along a long time ago. You know, we'd be busy fighting one another and... Well, naturally, we fought with other bands, too, to look after our own little piece of land. And so it's something that we never really think about.
So there's something that I've heard many times, and that is ceremony. And ceremonies will sometimes refer to, like, just all kinds of different, events and rituals and things like that. And even just I don't know, like it just feels like ceremony is integrated deeply into a lot of different activities and events in Indigenous culture. So what does ceremony mean?
To me, ceremony is something that it's really hard to explain because I think the only ceremony our people had was, they had a chief all the time. You know, each little band had its own little chief when they went traveling all over. And the usual ceremony, according to Mike Yaa, was, he'd have the first Sam and the first Saskatoon or the first everything. He had a taste, would say his prayer, and that made it okay for everybody else to start either harvesting them or eating it. So I think that was the only ceremony that they had during the summer months. And I always asked my mother asked my kya, did they have lots of ceremonies? So, oh, not really, because they're out in the land all the time, so they couldn't have too many ceremonies because they're gone right from spring right till fall time. So to have a real big ceremony, I think was something that is hard to describe right now, but if you put it in your mind, you know, if you're out there traveling and it's mostly family that's there, so ceremonies are something that is just specific to the band. Mm. I think each band had the same kind of ceremony where they said their prayer and thank you to the creator for bringing whatever food or everything they were going to do. So I think that was part of the ceremony they had. And I guess a long time ago they used to meet, and most of the Suwapmuk would meet in Kamloops and have a big shindig over there and bring all their leftover food from the winter and bring it there, and they'd party till everything was gone. Then they'd all move out into their own harvesting areas and get back out in the land. And it kind of died out, I think, probably when the priests came. It ended up just in the last late 18th century, they started making peace with the Okanagans, and they'd meet in, because I remember a little bit of it when I was just a kid. We'd meet in Salmon River with a bunch of Okanagans. They'd be playing stick games and whatnot over there. Hmm. And I think I was, what, 4 or 5 when I went over there, and I could remember them. I was down by the way looking up in the mountains. I was thinking about bears, all this, because you could see way up in the hills, and I'd be busy watching out for bears up there, see if I could see one roaming around or something. and apparently they did a lot of partying, the Okanagans, in I think in the late 1800s, because I came across a map up at Douglas Lake. It was one of the old, and I could see Spell Machine went right to ahead of the lake, and I was asking about it. And their story was that way back, before Douglas came, they had a big stick game with the chiefs and the Okanagans and the Splatchin, Spell Machine, I think they called themselves at that time. And they were playing stick games. They ended up losing that portion of terror. They got moved farther north. They lost that in a stick game.
Wow.
According to them people. So I don't know if that's true or not. So, but they did meet together and they shared food and tried to make peace, because they've been at odds for a long time. It was still kind of going on now, but so...
Okay, here, just because you mentioned always looking for bears up in the hills,
yeah.
This is one of those silly white people questions. Did Suwapmuk, in Suwapmuk culture, was there such a thing as a spirit animal? Did everyone have an animal that they were especially connected with?
Yeah, Tukusas, yeah, trying to think of a snaa. Snaa means a guardian spirit.
Mm.
According to some people, went wandering around for 4 days and four nights and fasted. But I strongly believe they went up into the sweat house for 4 days and four nights and sweated to look for their guardian spirit. It could be anything. It could be even a simple rock, or it could be an animal, or it could be a plant. But it's something. Anytime they were in trouble, they prayed for their snaa to come and help them. Now, it's been a strong belief in that. It's that guardian spirit. It could be any animal or, like I said, anything that came to their vision. That way, they, whenever they're in trouble, they would go out and pray to that snaa to come and help them. Yeah. So that was part of our culture a long time ago. I know I tried it. I went up for 4 days and four nights.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one thing, the first two are the hardest. Because I think the old coyote was playing tricks on me. He'd say, oh, if it rains, you better go. And you're always finding some excuse that the first 2 days, you know, you're not eating, you're only drinking water. I sweat in the morning and I sweat in the evenings. Meditate the rest of the day, night. And like I said, the first 2 days was the hardest. I was looking for all kinds of excuses to leave. Then on the third day, everything started going, you know, started really getting good again. You know, nobody was bothering me. The coyote, he must have left. He couldn't tempt me to leave anymore. So I lasted the 4 days and four nights. My vision was that came to me at the time was there was a little valley, like a big or a little dip, and there was four pit houses in the bottom. And I'm standing up on the hillside, and there's a bunch of people all around looking at those pit houses down there. All of a sudden, a little, like little dust devils or tornado came, pure white came around four of them. Came around, they went zip, 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 zip into four of them pit houses. And I thought it was over. I started walking away, and all of a sudden, people started looking back, and all of a sudden, there's a big, like a big horse and a chief and a full war bonnet came, all pure white came around. And I felt that it was like a steam, pure white just came, hit me, and then he rode off, gone. And that was it. Everybody started leaving. And I started asking my kia what it meant. She said she didn't know because that part of our culture was gone. She said, too, I told me to go ask other elders, so I went around and I asked other elders. But nobody could interpret the visions anymore. So only one guy that said something that kind of made sense. He said, you will know when the time comes what that vision meant. So I'm still waiting for it. No indication yet of what it really meant.
Hmm.
And I strongly believe, you know, that that vision was unification of our people. You know, a big, strong leader is going to come out of the woodwork and kind of unite all our people. You look at the Negroes, they have Martin Luther King. But who do we have? You know, we're all too busy fighting one another, you know, over a little bit of land, a little bit of money, and always continuously fighting over something. You know, we're not acting together. And maybe one day somebody will come out. You know, you look at the education level of our young people now, learning the white man's way. Sooner or later, somebody's going to come up and say, well, let's all work together. Make it really Kalmukulu,
yeah.
Land of the people. That's what I say now, you know. Things are gone real bad. You know, we got no more trees, we got no more salmon, we got no more food we eat anymore. Our ways are disappearing. I think at one time we all got to get together and start looking at how do we fix things. I know we can't do it alone anymore because a lot of our old ways are gone. How did our people look after the plants and the animals out there a long time ago. That ways are gone now. So is our spirituality. Well, there are struggling. There are things coming around, you know, like the sun dancing, and people are picking up different spiritualities. To me, it's okay, because some people don't like the sun dancing because of the brings anger, some supposedly brings anger into people. But what I'm thinking is that, you know, we've lost our spirituality, so we need something to believe in. Maybe we'll borrow from other bands, you know, and keep the good things in it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe eventually we'll get our own spirituality, you know, and I think everybody's struggling with spirituality now. You look at the churches now, you know, they're not filled to capacity anymore, because I remember our people used to all crowd into the churches on Sunday because we believed in that spirituality for a while. That's what I was angry at the Catholic Church for the longest time. But in our language, it's ulma yaws, you know, what will be, will be. They taught us their way, then they kind of abandoned us. They said, well, we healed you heathens, so now our job is done. So, you know, so I was kind of angry at them, but after a while, you know, when you think about it, well, lesson learned. They tried showing us their way, and it may be not the right way, but, and I think that's a good question now, is what is spirituality?
Is there such a thing in Sahuatmec culture as sacred fires?
Sacred fires? Oh, yeah. You know, it is now, people are using it for funerals, you know, to light the spirit of somebody who passed away. It's like a beacon when he travels around the world, you know, seeing what he's done and, you know, whatever it is. So they keep the fire going till they're either cremated or buried, so that way their spirit can come back to it. Because that fire goes out, well, and spirits left to wander around. And that, and I think that's part of the culture my grandmother was talking about, you know, that used to be deer or bear, little bear, or something wandering around the yard. That don't bother it. It might be the spirit of somebody who passed away, left to wander around until it made its way back to the spirit world, you know, made atonement to get back to the spirit world. To me, that's what that fire is about. But I think sometimes we lost that remembrance too. Fire was sacred because, you know, it brought light, it brought everything, heat. And a long time ago, you got to remember that our people didn't have matches. They had flint or something to use to keep it going. But I think through the times, they told somebody, you're the fire keeper. So he had to keep the fire going. Like if they moved from place to place,
mm-hmm.
according to my kia'a, they had one of those freshwater clams. And I think it was mulch. It's a growth from, an old growth from a birch tree. They take that off and they touch it on the fire and it starts smoldering. They put it inside that clamshell and they wrap it up. Then they take it to wherever they're going to set up a new camp. So that was his responsibility to get the fire going again.
Mm.
So that was the real, I think, the true meaning of firekeeper, to keep that fire going. Because it was hard to start one up again. It took a long time to start one up. So I think that they had a designated firekeeper way back when, but somehow or another, while the fire was, like I said, was a beacon for the spirit to come. So fire was really important to our people, you know.
Are there any sacred places in this area?
Tlascalt is the only one I could think of, you know, with the little people. Even now, some of our people are saying, no, the reason why our reserve don't get burned up is because the little people are looking after us.
Yeah, I'm so curious about the little people. Are you allowed to talk about that? Like, is that okay to talk about the little people?
Temixcuela?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us about the little people.
In our language, it's Temixcuela. It means little people. And according to legends, that They were around at one time. Something moved them underground. They started, I don't know whether it was their fear of people or whatever. They moved underground, and a few people have seen them, just like the Jonaiduch. That's big people, the Sasquatch.
Oh, yes.
And but people are saying, oh, yeah, they seen some Jonaiduch up on Mount Ida. And I told them, no, you can't, because they're like us. You know, traditionally, we keep people of our own territory. And at one time, maybe they had a battle with the Sasquatches, and that's why there's no stories of Sasquatches up in this area. The closest one I've heard so far was Westwold. Well, Ike Willard was talking about it. Cool. So that's the closest one I've ever heard on Jonaiduch, you know, and the Mixcoela, the little people.
And so what's their role now? Like, do they protect the mountain?
Well, that's what I keep telling people, you know. When they first started building a ski hill up there, people would come to me and ask me, I guess they wanted some support maybe to stop it or whatever. And I said, no. I told them the little people want them up there, and they let them. And sure enough, I guess they didn't want them up there. And it only lasted for a couple of years. Then what else happened?
Well, the logging, there was such a huge fight over logging.
Yeah, they were arguing about logging, and I told them the same thing. Well, if they want them up there, the little people will look after it. Next thing you know, that fire came and burnt most of it. And so, you know, the little people are up there. That's what I just keep repeating. They try to get me involved in it, but a little too controversial for me. You know, it's how do we work together to make it a better place, maybe for appease the little people up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's such a iconic mountain for Salmon Arm. Most people see it as they're, you know, when you're coming from away and yeah. you're coming around the corner on the highway and you see yeah. Mount Ida, Clascant in the distance, you're like, oh, I'm home, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's so iconic. So it makes sense that it would be a very special mountain.
Yeah. Well, it is. Thank to our people. I know it's hard for our people to go hunting up there, but there are some people that claim they went hunting up there, but I guess little people let them. My grandmother said, oh, they're talking about it, you know, they got little deer, they got little everything inside that mountain. So, but they do have powers, apparently, you know, they can make it, because they told one story was that hunter went way up to there no more food, and so he went out hunting, and he started walking and walking and walking, and he ended up getting lost, and he fell asleep under a tree. And when he woke up, the little people were standing around, and they asked him, what are you doing in our territory? He said, well, my family is hungry. We got no more food. So the little people used their powers. Because that guy got lost, he used their powers, and they pulled the land closer, and they told that hunter, you go up on top of that mountain, that little hill there, and you will see what we've done for you. So he went up on top of that little hill. He looked down, there was his village right there, because they used their powers to pull it close. And as he was going down, there was all kinds of deer and everything. So he shot a deer right away, and he brought the liver and the heart to the people, and he told them what they seen. So that was why a lot of times that, and it was kind of the legend too of Clascant, the same thing, because the hunter that woke up and he went up there, he was looking for food for his people. He fell asleep, and then the little people came around and they asked him what he's doing. He said his people were hungry. So the little people told him, well, you know why that is. He said, why? Said, you've disrespected the land, so that is why things were taken away from you. See, that's what I talk about, that disrespecting the land, taking and taking. And so he stayed up there for 4 days and four nights. He sweated, meditated. Then as he came down to the fourth day, came from that mountain, he seen the same thing, you know. So there's a lot of similarities in that story. Him finding game right away and feeding his family. Because mm-hmm. if you look at all our Chiptakula, all those was famine. you know, that fear of famine.
Mm-hmm.
So things weren't always copacetic, and still not copacetic now. You know, there's always threats of famine all the time. A lot of people are going hungry. So these are some of the things that the Chiptekwala tell us, because they were the first people here. Or not, yeah, the first people, I guess you could say, because in our culture, there are Kwasaltan. They are relatives. Everything is our relative. The trees, the plants, the deer, the fish, the insects, the, you name it. Even a simple rock is our Kwasaltan. So we all belong to it. Maybe that's the spirituality they're talking about, you know. So it's something that we have to strongly think about.
Can you tell me about smudging?
So smudging is a real big part of our culture, too, because I remember, I always tell that story of my grandmother, you know, when she was my cat. She was, she raised my cousins, my Uncle Bill's three daughters. She raised them when they worked at Kamloops School. So every time they came home, they'd stay with her. And they were always getting ghosted. You know, they all were saying, somebody's, yeah, something's at my, grabbing my feet. So out would come the smudge bowl, start smudging the house to get rid of the evil spirits. But you know what she did? She would come out with the holy water. She had a little vial of holy water. She'd splash it all over. I always call it, she double whammied those ghosts. She made sure.
No matter what your belief system, those ghosts were gone.
Yeah. But they always, whenever there were spirits around, bad spirits, out would come the smudge.
Yeah.
And our people done a lot of smudging with cedar boughs, dried cedar boughs. Because they told the story of my granduncle went up to Banff, or up the Morley Reserve. He brought up bales of fish and bales of cedar boughs, and he traded for some things. And we even got the bones right now. My grandmother made a sash out of it, the original buffalo bones. And for the longest time, we had that sash she made. It took me a long time. Every time I got Morley and asked them, and finally, I think it was up Bamford, I met them. And he looked at it and he said, those are buffalo bones. So they were hand carved.
And so you said cedar boughs were one of the things that were used in the smudge. So yeah. Were there other plants that were used?
Yeah, sage. Sage was another one.
Mm-hmm.
And we laughed about that one time. There was a big fire in camp there. I said, oh, the whole city's getting smudged.
Right? There's a lot of sage growing around there.
Yeah, well, you know that our medicine people never just picked any plant. Their belief was, you know, the farther away from human contact, the more powerful that the medicine will be. So they done a lot of the traveling. They had their little digging sticks and their knife. They went traveling all over, up way up in the mountains or all over the place to gather their medicines. They didn't just, you know, go out in the backyard and pick it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said that the medicine from the plant were a lot weaker than the ones that were farthest away from human contact. Well, that's one of the slachayas I got from my grandmother.
Okay, so tell us about how spirituality is practiced now, like now within Sohemic culture. Because, of course, the church influence is so deep. And like you said before, practicing Catholics, we're integrating Catholic spiritual practices into their everyday life, into their belief system. Now that there's been like the beginning of healing from that, how is spirituality practiced in this area now?
It's something we've lost a long time ago, and I think we're still looking for it. So I know myself, I just say my prayers, and you know, it's a difficult question.
Yeah. Well, then it's different, I suppose, for every individual, isn't it? Like you were saying mm-hmm. earlier, how the sweats have become your spiritual practice.
Yeah. And but all the other people, I don't know, that I can't even really tell you. You know, they've got bits and pieces. Some people still say the Catholic prayers, you know, and the Our Father and Hail Mary. But I think they kind of say it because maybe it's the only thing they really know about spirituality. I don't know. So that's another reason why I stay away from talking about spirituality. Because, you know, it's always a difficult question. You know, you think of all the wars that were started over spirituality, all the fighting that went on over spirituality.
So, okay, I have another question. Are there objects, are there certain objects in Sahuatmec culture that are considered spiritually significant or sacred?
I remember coming across a story of a carving in Merritt, one of the pit houses. They had a face carved on the ladder coming out of the pit house. And what they were thinking of, it wasn't anything spiritual or anything. It was just a warning to keep people away from there because of the smallpox epidemic. And like myself, I keep a little arrowhead on my chest. It's like a protector, you know, to keep away the bad stuff away from me. But I don't know where I got that from, but I must have picked it up from somewhere because I felt I had to wear it to keep away bad things. Maybe, I don't know if it's happening because it still didn't help me too much. maybe it had given me longer life, I don't know.
What about the eagle feather?
Well, eagle, anything to do with the eagle, it's more of a plains. Mm. They are regarded as one of our special birds because of their bigness and they fly. We got chiptakol on them, but the coyote has been our biggest. I guess he'd be, like in the Catholic Church, he'd be Jesus, I guess.
Yeah.
And the Kalkupi was a little old man, according to some of the stories. When he walked off into the sunset, he's just like, he'll be coming back someday. But the coyote was the one, was I guess our Jesus, but he was a trickster, but he tried to make things right. He done a lot of good things, and he done a lot of cheeky things too. So, but you know, that's what life is all about, you know, and learning from the animals and the plants. Because if you really look at our Chiptakola, you know, they talk about everything. I know, one people is asking me, were your people ever cannibals? I told them, yeah, I used to see my mouth water when I watch you walk by. You know, cannibalism, I don't think was really a part of our... I'd never heard of any stories of cannibalism.
Yeah, no.
But like I said, I don't know, maybe my mouth watered. I was thinking of a big steak going walking by. Big human steak walking by.
There's certainly a lot of misconceptions about Sahuatmec culture. And what about songs? Are there any songs that were part of the culture that you remember? That
yeah, my grandmother sings a bear song. And we got it on tape. Hmm. And I guess they did have not too many animal songs, but the bear was the one, I guess, that really was a big part of our culture, I think. And I'm not too sure, but I think my grand aunt, that was her guardian spirit, was a bear. She was small, but boy, can she ever fight. Like an angry bear. I guess she goes off, really loses it sometimes. I guess one time her husband was making fun of her or something, got her real mad, and I guess they had a heck of a time getting her off of him. She was all over him, and he couldn't do anything. He was biting and scratching and clawing, and oh, she got like a possession, I think. You know, she got possessed by the bear, they said. Hmm. And they had a heck of a time pulling her off her husband. Hmm. But apparently hers now is the bear. Hmm. So maybe there is something in it. I don't know. I never got a... My snout, maybe, because a lot of people see mine as a little old man walking behind me sometimes. I kind of pray to my snout, and, you know, when things are going bad, it all seems like good things always happen after, you know, after bad things, you know, bad times. Like it's in life, you know, bad things will happen for a while, then good things will happen, bad things will happen, you know. Life is never the same, you know. we forget about that, you know. Sometimes we focus in on the bad things too much, and that's when things really get bad. But always focus, our way, our people, I think, was to focus on maybe the good thing. Keep the happiness in you. Because I'll talk about that, you know, when I used to sit by the old pot-bellied stove with all the elders a long time ago, when I was a kid, that's all you heard every evening was laughter. They all were laughing. And that's what I tell people when I go up my sweat, I hear laughter a long time ago. When I first went up there, I heard the laughter of all our old people up and down the valley. Now all I hear is words of anger in so many different languages. You know, like I say, our communication is so rapid now. We know what's going on the other side of the world at the same time it's happening pretty well. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's that anger I hear in the air now, that anger of everybody in different languages. So I think, before contact, I think we were really relatively happy people. You know, we had our own laws, our own systems, we had our own ways, and we knew what to do. And then if you look at all our Chiptakala, it tells us how to live the right way. And if you're taught that from early childhood on, how can you do bad? You know, if you're only learning the good things all your life, how can you do bad things? Mm-hmm. So I think I see residues of it with our people yet especially the men all gather, you know, it's always laughing and talking amongst you. Same with the women, you know, there's a little bit of that now. But we don't communicate like we used to a long time ago, you know, where we talk to one another. Now it seems like we're isolating ourselves, you know. I think it's like that all over.
Yeah, we need to rebuild connections. There's been a lot of challenges lately. Yeah.
How can we be a community if we don't communicate?
Yeah, yeah.
And our people are still stuck on the reserve, and most of them, but the ones that are out there, I could see them starting to learn a little bit more now, higher education and learning more as they're traveling out there.
Mm-hmm. Louis, this has been a very fascinating conversation. Thank you. An hour seems to go by so fast with you. I love learning more about Sahuapmec culture from you. You're wonderful. And thank you for today. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity to say what you said to me before we started the show about who your God is now.
Oh, Elvis Presley. I've always been an Elvis fan all my life. And I don't know, there's something about his music, you know, that reaches out to me. And so he's my God. And same with, I told everybody, this is not Sahuapmec Uluk anymore, because hockey season's coming on and it's going to be Canuck Uluk pretty soon. Because I gave that talk at Sir Rogers' hometown hockey downtown. Everybody started laughing when I said that. It's Canuck Uluk now, land of the Canucks.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks so much, Louis. Cook's gem. Yeah.